Welcome, welcome, rock and roll rebels. This is another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. I'm Rosie, your host, and today we will be talking about the song that for over 50 years was the only number one hit in America to be sung in an Asian language. It wasn't until BTS had a hit in the near recent past that there was another number one hit in a Asian-speaking language, country's language. That would be Sukiyaki by Kyu Sakamoto. If I get my pronunciations wrong, I am terribly sorry. While the rest of my millennial kindred were having Japanese phase because of anime in high school, I was over here reading about King Henry VIII and his habit of decapitating his wives. I had a big Tudorian phase. So, on that note, we shall dig in to the deets on this song and the artist who performed it, as well as some fun facts about the Japanese recording industry and the introduction of more Western music to the Japanese audience. So, starting with the song, it hit number one in the United States and stayed there for 17 weeks. An instrumental version of it was actually sent to the astronauts on Gemini 7, making it one of the first pieces of music sent from Earth to non-Earthbound humanoids. Good ol' rock and roll in space, or in this case, instrumentalized 60s pop, but close enough. Because let's take a moment to appreciate the 60s. As this man would say, it was a true renaissance in music, and he considers himself very blessed and lucky to have been alive and an adolescent in that time, and I can't say he's wrong. The 60s music is just, even if it's not your favorite, though it is pretty much universally enjoyable, as in my mom will always observe that whenever there's like canned music at the stores, it usually is 60s and 70s pop hits. I can attest to this because when I worked at Walmart, they burnt me out on the Beach Boys. I'm sorry, but I do not want to go to Kokomo then or ever again. Kokomo is not the place I want to be. Anyways, the reason why I'm just like the 60s are so crazy awesome is that every rule and genre for what was considered pop did not exist in that decade, it seems like. Like, here you are, you've got a number one hit in Japanese, you have songs like Wipeout, you have songs with extended Hammond B3 organ solos, you have the psychedelic songs of the latter 60s, you've got Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor on the Bedpost Overnight? And probably the One-Eyed, One-Horned, Flying Purple People Eater in there somewhere. I think that came out in the 60s. You know, so you've got everybody from Cat Stevens to Ray Stevens running around writing songs. And the variety, not just in the obscure songs like those, but in the pop hits, I mean, you've got things like Cream running around with things like the Beach Boys. You've got Donovan. You've got Dion. You've got literally every conceivable facet and style of music. You've got people playing a sitar. It's so all over the place and not mundane. And there's so much variety. Like, no one gave a crap what convention was in the 60s. They just were like, I found this cool instrument at a thrift shop, I think we should put it on the record. Maybe not exactly that simplistic, but that's the vibe. It's like, hey, man, I found this thing, let's try it. And they did. And they made it work, because it came from the heart, which I feel is a lot of what is missing from modern music, is it feels contrived and not from the heart, and there definitely is not the variety that there was in the 60s. I don't know that there ever has been previous or since a decade whose popular music was that varied. There's just, it's all over the place and it's awesome! It's the best! I mean, I'm a 70s girl. Not actually. I was born in the 90s. But at heart, the 70s is where I want to be. Late 60s to mid 70s is my jam. But the 60s as a whole decade is just the coolest. You've got Woodstock and the Beatles and everything and the variety of music. Just think of the variety of musicians who were at Woodstock. You had Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Young, I don't remember if Young was with them or not, and Hendrix, and Melanie, and The Who, and Country Joe and the Fish, like, Santana. I mean, there's Latin influence on 60s music. Like, speaking of Latin influence, Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass, 60s music. It was truly all over the place, and Sukiyaki making it to number one is just another addition to that argument that it is probably the most decade with the biggest variety of music in it. And so now that I've talked about how great the 60s were for about 6 minutes, I am going to dig into Sukiyaki and the fun facts about Japanese music history around this time as well. Excuse me. So, the title actually ironically comes from a Japanese beef pot cuisine dish, but guy from Pi Records, Louis Benjamin, wanted a title that English speakers would be able to remember and find familiar enough that they could pronounce. So I guess he figured enough people have ordered this on a menu, maybe they know how to pronounce it enough to be like, hey, have you listened to that new song, Sukiyaki, by, struggle with the name of the artist probably, Kyu Sakamoto. And so it could be discussed easier. Why? And I guess he wanted it to be definitely Japanese, that the title, because the entire song is sung in Japanese by a Japanese artist. The English translation of the song's original Japanese title is I Look Up As I Walk, which is interesting, as in the song, the original, the lyrics when translated, basically were the songwriter's reflection on after a protest. He was with the protest on Poe, I believe it was, about not renewing the Japanese American treaty. And, you know, so these protests were about wanting the American military to no longer have military bases in Japan. And they didn't go well, and the government, prime minister, I want to say, is what Japan has as a government, you know, head honcho. He did not handle the situation well at all, either. Big ol', you know, I'm trying to think of a polite word for shitstorm, and I can't! And, so this was, the songwriter's reflection on that. And so the song is about this guy who's looking up and whistling as he walks. That way his tears won't fall. Which, you know, sort of couched it as a love song, too, where it wasn't openly political. Kind of how similar, to Bruce Springsteen has done songs on Wrecking Ball and The Rising, where it's not overt, but if you lived it, you recognize it. So, that being the case, it's a little ironic that the song was written in protest of the American military bases in Japan, because it was those military bases that sort of put in the Western influence on the pop tune genre of Japanese music. I say pop tune in quotation marks because there is an actual Japanese word for this genre of music, which I could not pronounce and was afraid to even write down. It was so complicated looking. But it translates into pop tune. So if I say pop tune from henceforth, it is that genre of Japanese music to which I am referring to. And so the pop tune genre was popularized and in given a big Western influence, which became widespread, on American military bases. Not just through the American military personnel, but also through the incoming musician refugees from Shanghai. Some refugees, when the communists took over China, went to British possession Hong Kong. Others went to Japan. And musicians had to get out of the country because the government said that the only music you should be listening to is Chinese military music. So, and that pop music was decadent. So the people of the newly minted People's Republic were not allowed free choice in music. Also, the government probably knew that music has historically always been used in revolution and rebellion, and once they started oppressing people, they probably guessed that some people might try rebelling. Also, you quash the arts, you quash the human soul. Such a fun conversation we're having here this fine evening. So, Japanese jazz music, I mean Chinese jazz musicians, sorry, that got scrambled in my brain. Chinese jazz musicians went to Japan with help on and off the musical stage from the American military to, you know, get away from a government that was killing people for wearing glasses, because that meant you read and were probably intelligent. That's totally an okay thing to do. No, no, it's not. Not at all. But yes, before I get on a historical tangent about that, we will be discussing this, which is Japanese pop tune genre. Another significant thing to do with the genres becoming more, popular, where it was actually popular pop, has nothing to do with the American military or the People's Republic of China, but it does have to do with the Yakuza. The mob was gonna get in there somehow. Manager who was a member of the Yakuza, in the 50s and 60s put a big influence on, entertainers being treated as professionals. So these pop tune artists were now given the respect due to a professional person. Rather than, I'm not super familiar with my Japanese culture, but I can only imagine if they weren't getting treated as professionals, they were probably getting treated the way this country and Western civilization in general treated your vaudeville acts and your circus acts, and where there's sort of a downgraded level of, you know, society. You wouldn't be, ooh, I really respect that guy from a vaudeville show. It wasn't until they went on to become the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges that we had to start giving them a little bit more respect. They became, you know, televised, or at least recorded and filmed, and therefore earned respect. It's weird to think of a world before film where our entertainers were not respected as fountains of wisdom, whether they are or not, and were just kind of the opposite, where no one was like, eh, I don't care what that dude's, you know, that they were viewed as sketchy, not celebrity. And so anyways, did I write down that guy's name? Because I feel like it needs to be said. If the dude was cool enough to reform the Japanese recording industry, or at least entertainment industry, I really should have written down his name. Please tell me I did. Ah! I wrote it down! Whether I can pronounce it or not is the question. I'm gonna take a whack at it. Kazuo Kazuo. It's spelled Kazuo, and his last name is spelled Taoka. I'm going with Kazuo Taoka, because it kind of looks like the Asian philosophy of Tao, but I could be totally wrong, and I am sorry if I am. Sorry, Mr. Taoka, if I mispronounced your last name, if you are still alive. Which is probably not the case, because he was a manager in the 50s and 60s. But, anyways, so that was another progress for the pop tune genre to become more respected and more widespread as a result. So, with Western influence of the actual West having military bases there, and the Chinese jazz musicians on refugee from China, which incidentally, they were, when I read about it, they were categorized as jazz musicians, but at this rate, there's a lot of similarities between the songs I listen to by Sakamoto that aren't Sukiyaki, and even Sukiyaki, and like our 50s jazz, as in like Nat King Cole type stuff, because Nat King Cole was a jazz pianist. And this, a lot of the songs that Sakamoto does that I listen to have a very lush, arranged Nat King Cole kind of sound to them. Or at the very least, you know, mid to late 50s and early 60s pop. Which, you know, I mean, it is early 60s pop, just from a different country. Anyway, so I want the jazz musicians, I don't think that that necessarily means that they were playing Mingus and Thelonious Monk, but, you know, it could have just been more like popular jazz, which if that was the case, it definitely shows in the music that came out of the pop tune genre that they influenced. But speaking of Mr. Sakamoto, of the pop tune genre, and performer of Sukiyaki, at least the version that made it number one on the charts. If you look it up, there's like 14 different covers of this song. Like, it's pretty intense. And a lot of those are in its original title or a translation thereof and not named after a Japanese dish. Mr. Benjamin of Pi Records, why would you do this? Anyways, so Sakamoto, he had a career history not unsimilar to a lot of Western, you know, pop and rock musicians, as in he left school for music. He did so to join the Drifters, not the American doo-wop group, but the Japanese group, which I think from what I was reading, even did like some comedy acts and stuff. Like they were kind of almost a variety act, but he was unhappy with his position as second vocalist and he went back to school, meaning he missed out on an opportunity had he stayed with the Drifters of being the opening band for the Beatles' first ever Japanese performance or first ever performance in Japan rather. Granted, that performance only lasted for 40 seconds, but still, they got to open for the Beatles' first ever show in Japan, which is something to brag about to your kids. Sakamoto, however, went back to school, started a band with one of his classmates, and ended up getting a record deal as a solo artist from Toshiba Records. And that is about the time that Sukiyaki, you know, came out, hit the charts, and began to receive international attention and success, which it did. It's not the only success that Sukiyaki had, I mean, that Sakamoto had. Aside from the song Sukiyaki, he had another hit called China Nights. Granted, it only made it to number 58 in America. But still, it charted. You know, nothing to sneeze at there. Especially when you've literally, your previous song is a song that will never be top for over 50 years as a foreign language hit in an Asian language. So that alone is something to put a feather in your cap. He also placed number 7 at a international singing festival in the 60s that took place in Rio de Janeiro. In 1968. And he was on Swedish TV during that other time that there were Olympics in Tokyo. Summer Olympics, no less. In 1964, he was on Swedish TV when they were in Tokyo covering the Olympics. So he's an international TV star. He did actually have an acting career as well. He was on he actually had to cancel going on to the Ed Sullivan Show because it interfered with filming for one of his films. Poor Ed. He got snubbed for a movie. Oh well, he'd have other acts come on, as we all know. But, that was, you know, his career. Music and acting. He was putting out music into the 80s, and all still very lush, arranged, just lovely pop music. Like, it shows, because one of the standards for the pop tune genre was that it, you know, the desired look was for you, the performer, to look kind of cute and affable and approachable. Sort of like the boy that you would take home to your parents. 70s was all about pop acts looking like the boy you don't take home to your parents. Anyways, so that was the gist with the 50s and 60s pop genre in Japan, and maybe even later. Was looking cute and approachable, so think Dion and the Beach Boys and Bobby Darin. The wholesome, I would say all-American boy, but all-Japanese boy in this case. And that his music fits that persona too. It's just inviting. Like, I don't understand any of the words, but it just feels happy and wholesome and beautiful. Genuinely beautiful. Like, you don't have to understand the words. It could be, you know, about something tragic. I mean, crap, the 1960s, try this for their variety of wild things, the splatter platters. Like, you had a where can my baby be, which my mom danced her feet off to, about a dude's dead girlfriend. Like, the 60s were a trip when it came to variety of music. And, That being another example. So for all I know, some of these songs I've listened to by Sakamoto could be like Japanese splatter platters. It's not the leader of the pack. You know, is it? I'm trying to remember. There's a girl group song about the girl whose boyfriend is a biker and dies in a motorcycle accident at the end of the song. For all I know, I could have been listening to the Japanese equivalent. But anyways, so Sakamoto's music is well worth checking out. It is a with tragic remembrance that on this day, August 12th, in 1985, 36 years ago, Kyu Sakamoto, along with over 500 other passengers, died on Japanese Airlines Flight 123. It is, to this date, historic, the most deadly plane crash in history. Part of that has to do with the fact that at about 20 minutes or a half hour after it crashed, the American presence was like, asked the Japanese, like, do you want us to start search and rescue? Like, we buzzed a helicopter by, and there's people on the ground, and we don't know if they're alive or dead, but there are people. And they didn't get a response, and rather than starting on search and rescue that evening, they assumed all were dead and thought it was just going to be recovery, and so they spent the night setting up camps and did not set out to save the people until the next day. One of the four survivors out of the over 520 total people on there, counting the crew, recalls hearing wails and cries throughout the night of people who were still alive, who hadn't died on impact, and evidence from people who examined the body said that they could have been saved, possibly, had they received medical attention, within 2 hours instead of 12 hours. So it is a sad thought to think that the most famous Japanese singing voice to the West could have been one of those individuals, expiring and wailing throughout the night and gradually growing silent as they passed, during the overnight stay in the mountains, with injuries that they had sustained. Because even the 4 or 5 survivors that there were, they were all injured. I mean, it's a very, very tragic story to read. I read up on it before doing this. I didn't even intend for this to happen on the anniversary date. I just got interested in Sakamoto when I heard one of his songs when I was driving to the Comic Con last weekend. Or rather, I heard this song, I heard Sukiyaki. And I was like, oh, well, I've never heard anything else by this guy. Let's go see what else he did. That's how I end up on most of my rambles. So, a sad remembrance, and I will dedicate this episode to the families of those who perished that evening and to the 4 survivors. I don't know if they're still alive now or not. I mean, this was 36 years ago. But, still a solemn day in history, which does not get discussed as much. I didn't even know about it. So the things you learn when you're looking into rock and roll and pop music, you never know where it'll take you. And on that fun note, I'm not usually as much of a downer as y'all know, but there's a time for joy and a time for grief, to quote the birds who were quoting King Solomon. I think it's out of Proverbs. I don't think it's out of Psalms. It's out of Proverbs, I think. So, now that we've had our time for mourning, go have your time of dancing. And speaking of dancing, Thursdays on my Instagram now are Thundercrack Thursday, where you can see me do a very short, probably less than 5 minute ramble about dance songs, songs that should be danced to, dance history, and maybe one of these days, if I'm feeling plucky, I will exhibit some of my moves. But till then, it will just be factoids about, fancy footwork inducing songs. And so, on that time of dancing note, I will wish y'all a good week, and I will see you next week for more fun rock and roll. And have a great week, and be kind to each other, and rock on.